Kia ora koutou and welcome to this week's episode of Let's Get Sexual. I am Alicia and I'm the host of this sexually explorative podcast. Welcome to another episode, everyone. This one is such a treat. It is the first cis male of the entire podcast. So thank you, Nick, for coming on and breaking that seal, because I wanted to get a cis male on here for a while just to give us a little bit of a different perspective. Always good to broaden our horizons and learn more from people with different backgrounds. So thank you, Nick. I'm really excited, actually, for everyone to hear this conversation, because Nick and I ended up talking for 2.5 hours, and I have done my best to edit that down to a couple of hours and have split this into two parts so that, once again, it's easy to consume. This first part is around Nick's background in terms of what he learned about sex growing up or what he didn't learn, and also his journey through puberty and his first sexual experiences. And then we go on to online dating and the quagmire that it is. Nick talks about his thoughts around online dating, some of his experiences. As somebody who's used online dating for 7 years, it was just really interesting to hear Nick's thoughts on what it's been like. And then the second part will be released this weekend sometime, and we go into sex. So we talk about sexual exploration and porn and usage of sex toys. Nick then is so amazing and shares his journey with mental health and using antidepressants and the effect they've had on libido. And it's so interesting because we're getting more comfortable talking about mental health, and I am so amazed and so proud of men coming out and sharing their mental health journey. But what we often don't do is we don't talk about the side effects of medication that is used for mental health. So antidepressants, what they can do, it does often have an effect on our libido, and that can really be detrimental for our sex lives or our relationships, and it's a new thing to navigate. I absolutely adore that Nick has come on and shared so much of his life, and I'm so appreciative of him coming on. I know you will all thoroughly enjoy this episode in its two parts, and don't forget to subscribe or leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And please get in touch if there is anything that you got from this that you thought was great, anything you might want Nick to know. Please just DM me at letsgetsexual.podcast on Instagram. I'll put that on the show notes so you know where to go. Really awesome to hear your thoughts and feedback. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
That's okay. I'm excited, a little bit nervous, but I'm ready to do it.
You're gonna share all your fucking wisdom, as always.
Wisdom, I don't know. Okay.
All right, that sounds good. So, how I usually start an episode is asking like a random question.
Yep.
So, what I want to ask of you is, do you have any sex toys?
No, actually.
Okay.
I have previously, but no, I currently no.
If you were to get one, what would be your first purchase in the sex toy department and why?
My first purchase? This might be kind of like a stick with what you know kind of thing, but I have owned cock rings before, so and they're a fun time. And so if I was to buy something else, it would be that.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I can completely get behind that. I think cock rings are great. I think they're like something you can explore by yourself, but also use with partners. So I'm all behind the cock rings. I think they're an awesome sex toy.
Yeah.
Freaking love it. So anybody who has yet to try a cock ring and has some having relationships with somebody with a penis, go ahead, do it. Or even like strap-ons. You can do with a, not that the person with a strap-on would have anything from it.
Yeah.
You know, you'd get the stimulation. It would be wonderful. Okay, that's cool. That's a great way to start it off, just getting deep in there.
Yeah, why not?
Now, getting back into, I guess, a bit more of a holistic nature, going back in time, growing up, we learn a lot of things around sex and relationships and our own sexuality, a lot of which fucks us up depending on what we've learned and who we've learned it from, and some things which are really inspiring or can open us. What type of messages do you remember picking up around sex and sexuality and relationships when you were younger?
Okay, so this is a bit of an interesting one, and I think maybe it's like a societal kind of understanding that at some point your parents are going to sit you down and talk to you about the birds and the bees, right? My parents never did that, ever. Like, not once. Yeah, never. They've still never done it. I'm 33 now.
A virgin because you never heard the talk.
because I've never known about it. So everything I picked up was, you know, through friend groups at school. I think year 10, maybe year 9, year 10, there was some sex ed at school. So it was just kind of piecing together all of this stuff, and that's probably where the basis of it came. And yeah, never had that awkward conversation with my parents. So it was I was sheltered, but like a self learner. Like I knew it was a thing, and so I wanted to, you know, find out about it.
Yeah. If it happened in like year 9 and 10, where you were kind of doing sex ed shit, were you guys talking about like in your friend groups before then? Because I know sometimes like older brothers of friends can introduce things or hand out like porn mags, or somebody often gets into it and then spreads it around the friend group. Did that ever happen?
Okay, so I went to high school in Christchurch, but before that I grew up in a small country town just north of Christchurch, which had about 400 people in it. And I, one of my childhood best friend, I'm still best friends with now, we somehow managed to get, there was like a newspaper at the dairy, and it used to have like, I think it was called The Truth, I think it was. And on the back it had like sort of soft core porn, I guess, like just woman and just scantily clad, interesting clothing, and occasionally topless as well. So we were like 9 or 10 years old, and we were like, this is pretty awesome. But like, you know, not really knowing the full ramifications of it and stuff. But then also around the time, at next door to that dairy, there was a petrol station, and they used to do hire VHSs, and there was always like the top row, and it was not like an R18 section or anything. It was the top row, which we had like had the VHSs like covered. So you couldn't really see what they were, but you knew they were naughty, you know, like that kind of thing. However, we managed to get one of my friends, his brother, to rent us, or to rent Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of that was like our first experience of like, even though it's a cartoon, like, you know, commenting on women or anything sexual, like laughing at Morning Wood or, you know, anything like that. Like that was a lot of it. And for sheltered country boys at the time, that was like hilarious to us, you know. And like even so far as we went to like write our own Beavis and Butthead scripts, you know.
Fuck yes.
And then once my parents discovered the written stories and like, yeah, got a telling off, and they were binned, and yeah, it was pretty funny. But yeah, so that, I think that was kind of my first memory of knowing. But that, yeah, I would have been 9, 10 years old, maybe 11. When we got to, because I moved from the country to the city for high school, I didn't really have like a group of friends before that. So like all my friends I met in the first year of high school, like they'd all known each other, because they'd gone through intermediate and Christchurch together. So I didn't really have that sort of, I don't know, deeper connection with them. So it wasn't until, and I bounced around friend groups through high school as well. So yeah, around probably, it must have been year 10, full form. The big thing at that time was Sky One. There was like softcore porn on at Sky One at midnight.
Okay.
And when you used to stay over at a friend's house who had Sky, you know, we used to chuck it on, and we'd be like, oh, and then like if we heard his parents like moving down the house, you know, would quickly change the channel, or like, you know, like pretend to be asleep, like, you know, like, yeah. So I guess a lot of it for me was just through media, through friends. But yeah, there was no like older brother introducing it into the circle or anything like that. Nah.
What do you wish you'd had more of, like in regards to, you know, sexual knowledge and sexual education?
Just I think there was such a like people didn't like talking about it. And even now, like, I think society as a whole has got better at talking about it. But like, I think when I was a teenager, there was a like almost this, I don't know, illusion that guys just like were in the changing rooms comparing the size of their junk and all this kind of thing. That never happened. Well, for me at least, that never happened. And like people would like hide, like they'd like wouldn't want to make sure they, you know, they didn't get seen, you know, and that kind of thing. So I don't know, just more. I don't know if that was just being an awkward teenager, puberty, or just like the societal pressures of not being able to talk about it. I'm unsure, but I just wish people were a bit more open about it. And you know, I don't know. It's a really interesting question, and I've never really thought about it that deeply. But yeah, just off the top of my head, that's kind of where I probably could have used some more pointers.
I find it bizarre that everybody has a sexuality story and background, whether you want sex or not, and it's still quite taboo to discuss. So this is a space where everybody is exploring to some extent.
Yeah.
And the fact that we don't talk about it. I mean, I learn more about like tennis, a sport I don't play just by existing in society, than I do about sex and sexuality. Yeah, yeah. And it's fucking bizarre. I find it just, and it's usually because adults are so uncomfortable with it because of their childhoods that they don't want to talk about it. And I think they use the excuse, like I work in family violence and sexual violence, and the common discussion is like, when's the good time to have the talk or have a talk or start discussing it? And people are thinking like, oh, 14, 15. I'm like, you're way too late. Most kids have accessed porn by the age of 11. I think it's something like over 20% have accessed it by the age of 8 or seen it or like, you know, been privy to it. And I think it's, we've got to start being more comfortable in it ourselves. Otherwise, we're just going to perpetuate the same issues with our children. And it doesn't even have to be, you don't have to show them a freaking porn at the age of 4 or 5, but even teaching bodily boundaries and consent. My nephew, if he doesn't, and my niece, if they don't want to hug me, cool, shit, that's awesome. When you do want to hug me, you come to me, because we always tell kids, you know, you have to go and do shit that you don't want to do. Like your body is other people's. And I think people don't see that. They're like, that's so different from sex and not knowing how to say no or asking people if they want to do shit. And I'm like, it's actually the same thing, because it's all the same messaging of whether you have ownership over your body.
Well, I think, and just on, so the high school I went to was non-religious at all, but my health and sex ed teacher was very religious. So coming, he wasn't, like he was a lovely man. But he wasn't the kind of person that I wanted to get that information from, like, because it seemed like he was uncomfortable teaching it, you know. But he'd kind of, so I don't know, I never really had that older person to ask it was, or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of us don't, which is I think why so many people access like porn now, because it's so easy to do and it's like the biggest educator for people, which is kind of fucked up. I'm like, it's entertainment. I'm fine about porn, but like it's entertainment, it's not education. So it's, But going through that, you mentioned before like puberty. So what it was puberty like, and like what is it like for guys and boys, and what are some of the myths around it?
Well, I don't know. It was just the first thing, like just before it gets too sexual, I guess, is like, you know, I got really tall really fast. And that was like one thing I noticed straight away, and that's the first thing I noticed, and before, and then everything else happened. Like the voice started breaking, which looking back is hilarious, but at the time you're like, I hope this doesn't happen all the time, like, you know, in the middle of giving a speech or whatever. And then obviously you just go off. I can't actually remember, but I have a recollection of like probably one of the earliest times masturbating for the first time. And it was in the bath.
It's a great space.
You know? Yeah, well, it was. And then, you know, relatively easy to destroy the evidence, I guess.
That's
yeah. But yeah, that kind of thing. Was never a sock guy. So never did that. It was always a bath time, but yeah.
Clean. It's just like, get rid of it. It's gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was kind of, 13, 14, 15. I was very, very awkward around girls at school. I felt like, looking back differently, I was the kind of kid who, like, you know, if a girl talked to me, that was awesome, you know, and like, I'd probably read too much into it. I'd be like, oh, she likes me, that's cool. But I'd be like, oh, wow, you know. But then, I don't know, as I got a little bit older and when I moved high schools, when I was 15, I sort of went to a high school that was a third of the size, and was really into the music by this point. And I don't know, just like playing music in that school kind of just opened up a lot more friend groups than it did at my previous school. And just, I like, that was the first time I became friends with girls. Mm. Like, you know, like I, the very first day of high school at that school, like, these two girls in my form class came and talked to me because they didn't know who I was. And like, I'm still pretty good friends with them today, you know? But that was the first kind of like, oh, girls, like you can be friends with them and blah, 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 blah. Puberty was like pretty non-eventful for me, I think. I don't know. My parents have, I've talked to my parents a little bit about how I was growing up as a teenager and all that. And they said I was like, an absolute breeze to deal with. Like there was nothing. And apparently compared to my sister who was quite difficult.
Yeah.
So I was apparently a bit of a breeze. So it was nice to hear as close as we've ever got to talking about it.
I love it. Do you think, you know, guys go through puberty at different stages, but like this might have been different because you moved around kind of during that period quite a bit. Did you feel like it was talked about, like those changes you might go through, what they might mean? Do you feel like there was any bullying going on around it within guys or from like even from girls? Or was there any kind of communal experience around it, or did it just happen to you?
No, it just kind of happened. But if you, the thing that would make, you know, you'd get bullied for the most or like made fun of was if your voice broke. Like, you know, that was the thing. Like if you're in the middle of talking, you'd be like, like everyone just cracks up at you and you're just like, you just feel the shame immediately. And you just like, don't want to talk ever again. But there was nothing to do with, you know, like the sexual side of it, like that I can remember, just kind of happened, you know.
Like, was it annoying getting like morning woods or like getting erections randomly? Like, I've always been so interested in how just going about your everyday life would be difficult.
I definitely the later years in high school, you know, that was like around 16, 17. That was when I became really like, I guess became sexually active as well. So it became awkward. Sometimes you'd be like, and I don't know, like the school shorts we used to wear were just really bad for hiding it. So it was just like, hey, Nick, let's go somewhere. And you're like, in about 30 seconds. Or like, you know, you're like trying to cross your legs or like, you know, if it's a hot day, you've got your jersey. So you're like holding it over your shorts just so, you know, it's not obvious. But that definitely... I can remember lots of awkward moments like that.
And it could happen when you're not even thinking about sex, right? Or like you didn't think you were turned on, like it would just randomly happen.
Yeah, correct. And you're just like, oh, what? Like now?
I'm talking about math. Damn, that's a sexy subject.
God damn, algebra. Got me again. you know, it's got the word bra in it. Yeah, it would catch you off guard. I don't remember any specific time or if I, maybe they were too traumatic and I've blocked them out, of like people making fun of you or like, you know, oh, he had an erection. There was nothing like that I can remember. But it definitely happened. There was a like a few guy friends I had at high school who were a lot more open about talking about sex and sexual stuff, and they'd obviously, or they had been sexually active probably since they were like 14 or 15. Mm. And so, not that they were like experienced, but they were like, they were very open about it. And like, they'd be like, they'd talk about it and, you know, laugh about it or as most teenagers do, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of answers your question.
Yeah. And I know we didn't have this in like our other questions, but I want to know, how freaky is it going into your first sexual experiences with another person when you're like a young guy who's supposed to kind of know what they're doing? Did you feel like you had to kind of know what you were doing? How did you navigate that?
I was a very steps kind of guy. The first girl I ever kissed was behind a church on my street. You know, and that was it. And I still remember it tastes like honey. You know,
that's good.
And yeah. And then like that was when I was living in Christchurch when I was like 14, I think. And it was my friend's older sister. So it was like pretty awesome at the time. But then when moved high school, I remember like hanging out with a girl after school, and you know, one thing led to another and got my first blowjob. And that was pretty cool. And she was like fully in control. She was just like, you know, just relax and I'll do my thing. And that was quite comfortable actually. It was kind of, I was nervous, but I didn't like really feel any pressure. However, then I got a girlfriend, like my first proper like girlfriend, I guess. I was 17, I think. Literally just turned 17. And she was 16. And yeah, she was my first sexual partner. And I still remember the first time, like pretty much like it's every horror story you probably have heard ever. Like she was the one who wanted to do it. I wanted to do it, but she was the one who like pushed for it. Like, and I was like, okay, sweet as, like, let's give this a go. And the foreplay was just, you know, foreplay was just too much. Like, and then like within 15 seconds it was over, you know, and it was kind of, okay, that just happened. And then there was kind of like this awkward like moment, like, is that it? Or like, you know, and then I remember like the next night we went to, her friend's, it was like a party and we went to like, everyone had gone to bed and we were in like on a mattress in the lounge by ourselves and went to do it again. And I like premature ejaculation, like straight away. And I was just like, oh, well, this sucks. Like, I hope this is not going to be it for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah, it's scary, actually.
It was really scary because I was like, but then after that, I just took charge and like it was like my first experience giving head as well.
How was that? Like, can I just ask that first? Is that like, what is it like your first experience of giving like a girl head? I mean, it's a whole new battlefield for you.
I had no idea what to expect. And I I had no idea what to base it on. I had no, it was kind of, and I think she was a little bit I don't think she expected me to do that, like because of what happened. But, you know, and then after a certain amount of time doing that, I felt like ready to go again. And then that was when like it lasted like probably like a good 20, 25 minutes. And like then, and afterwards we were just like, holy shit. Okay. That's sex.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. That's what it should be. And like, I remember the next day, she texts me and she'd obviously told her best friend about it, and her best friend like walked past me at school the next day and just like winked at me, and I was just like, oh no. Like,
yeah, I'm sorry, like, there are no secrets between us women. I always find it really bizarre how guys like, oh my god, you tell your sister that, or you tell your best friends, and I'm like, sorry, there's no filter.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely took me like a wilder just because we don't, like...
I think this is a misconception that guys, like, always talk about their sex life with each other. Like, talk about that. Do you?
Well, like, I don't think we necessarily talk about, like, our sex lives. But we definitely talk about, like relationships, but it's more in a casual, like... You know, or been on any Tinder dates lately, or been on, you know, like it's nothing like, or it's just like, oh, that chick behind the bar, she might be single. Why don't you know, she could be good for you. Like it's not like you know, really deep conversation or like, I think there's also like a bit of a misconception that, you know, guys brag about like the number of conquests and stuff like that, but I've never been in a friend group, and I've got lots of different friend groups, as you know, and I've never had that conversation once.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe there are some people who do, but you know, I've never experienced it personally.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's never very hollow stuff. There are a couple of like very close friends that I can talk about that stuff with, and it's usually more like a, I don't know, it's almost like a get it off your chest kind of vibe. It's more like, this happened to me. Like, have you ever experienced this?
Yeah.
Like, and what were your thoughts? Like, it's not like, oh my God, I did this and it was hilarious and it was awesome, blah, 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 blah. It's actually more like inquisitive. Like,
yeah,
have you done this? Because I did this and this is kind of weird. What do you think? Have you done, what did you, you know, like it's kind of a very, but there's only a couple of like, close guy friends that I can talk about this stuff,
yeah,
with it. It just depends on that relationship.
That's true.
Like instances where, like, I don't know how I can say this, if there's a right way or wrong way to say this, but like I'm guessing that at some point in your life you've had like a hilarious sexual experience, right? Like probably multiple. But those do come up occasionally from time to time. Like you'll be like talking with someone, you'll be like, oh my God, I've got to tell you that this happened. Like, you know, that does happen occasionally.
Yeah. And it's great. Oh my God, who doesn't love that shit? There's actually this Facebook group of women who it's basically around like sex, and women will share their stories or ask for advice. And holy shit, there are some experiences where I just like lose my mind laughing. And I just could not imagine turning up and having that situation. Yeah. And it's fun to kind of share that stuff because you're just am I the only one that finds this different?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's definitely, I think as I've got a little bit older as well in experimentation, not just in sexuality, but with like drugs and things like that, there's almost more scope for like stories and like funnier or like just things to happen, like, or just different experiences in general. So I think that's like helps the storytelling aspect of it, because if you're experimenting more, you're going to tend to find more, I don't know, individual experiences that you want to get opinions on or
storytelling is so powerful. It really builds a community and builds connection. And so that's what I always notice in the space, is that the more people storytell about anything, like whether it's their drug experimentation, sex experimentation, whatever, the more comfortable everybody feels, because they don't feel abnormal. And even though you might have slightly different experiences, there's some commonality between a lot of it, and it's just really human. Yeah, I love that. Agreed. But in terms of online dating, let's discuss that, because I know you online date. So what has been your experience with it?
Well, so 7 years ago was when I first installed Tinder, 2013, and I've had various stints on and off it over that 7 years. And it's a trip, man. Like my first stint in it, when I first moved to Auckland, was actually all positive. Like it was, the first woman I met off Tinder, I'm still really good friends with her, and like nothing ever happened sexually or anything, but we hung out a few times. I still catch up with her when I, you know, I'm in town. And yeah, we actually built a good friendship out of it. So, and then like there's a girl, one of the first girls I matched with, and there was some kind of like attraction there. That was a bizarre experience as well, because like you've like talked to each other on this app, and then you go and meet for a drink, and you're just like, it's basically like a continuation of the conversation. Like, it, yeah, it's, you've already covered a lot of things. So it's, I a lot of people give like the online dating world shit, but it's actually like a relatively good screening process. Like, you can pretty quickly determine if you're going to gel with someone or, yeah, or not. Yeah. And one of the struggles I had, and this happened in Auckland, actually, I think I've told you this story before, actually, is that I was having some really good conversations with a woman on Tinder. We agreed to meet up, and we met up, and she was just completely closed off, like nothing like the conversation we'd had on the app. Like, very, every time I'd like try to initiate a conversation or like a discussion, she would just like, yes, no, closed it off. And it was just really weird. Mm. And I got like creeped out. I was kind of like, is this the same person? And she'd obviously arranged like a friend to come meet. I was like 3/4 of an hour in. Like, and well, it seemed really staged to me. It might not have been, but like a friend walked in, was like, oh my God, hey, blah, 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 blah. And like, and she was like, oh, this is Nick. And I ended up talking to her friend like way more. And then it was getting a little bit late, and it was just very a bizarre situation. And in the end, and this is the only time I've ever done this, I actually got up, went to the bathroom, and I left, and I didn't come back.
Wow.
Yeah. And I like didn't know. And get this, the next day she sent me a message saying it was nice to meet you.
Even though you'd scarfed, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd had a few, so like and she'd had a few ones, so maybe.
I think in these situations it's so, like, because you feel like you kind of know the person, but you also realize you don't know them at all.
Nah. And it was just so weird. And then after that, I actually kind of, I think I deleted it for a while, and I was just kind of like, this was such a weird experience. I, you know, yeah, maybe I'm not really into this. And then when I moved back to Christchurch end of 2015, I reinstalled it then. And it was quite funny actually seeing like people, because I'd lived in Christchurch before, but like seeing people that I knew. And because in Auckland, so it was, I didn't really know anyone up there. So it was, you know, everyone was new, but in Christchurch, I was like, oh, I know that person. Like, it was, yeah, it was a bit different. But like, yeah, Tinder's a, it's a, what, Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, whatever one you use. I had all three at one point.
Yeah.
I actually really liked the idea of Bumble. I liked the idea of the female understanding the conversation, because my pet peeve, and I'm sure a lot of guys' pet peeve on Tinder, is when you match with someone and they don't talk, or like, yeah, you send them a message and they never reply. And yeah, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of, and having seen female friends Tinder, like, man, I just wouldn't be able to do it if I was a woman, I don't think. It's an absolute cesspit. It's just like topless guys hunting cars, guns, like I wouldn't be able to do it, eh? Like, it's pretty, yeah, I don't know. I'm just hoping that maybe one day someone will find me in between all that, and, you know.
Between the hunting photo and the topless photo with no face. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 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 that's right.
Or like the 40-year-olds who like have it under, so all you can see is like just their chin.
Oh,
and they've, yeah, got no smile.
Yeah, like, and I immediately, when I saw like a couple of my female friends Tinder, I was just like, I immediately felt bad for complaining about Tinder. Like, you know, oh, this girl, we matched and she never replies. And like, oh, and then I was like, okay, I don't have it that bad. Like, you know,
it's just a different experience, because I guess what I would almost say about it is, one thing that I guess this is different for each person, and this is a very privileged position that I'm, that feels a bit egotistical, but I feel like probably most women have less issue getting matches.
Yeah,
100%. The issue for guys is like getting the match. For us, it's then dealing with all the match shit. So you get people asking if you'd fuck your dad, like what position would you want to do or something, and all these things, just or like just like dick questions. Pics. Just, yeah, all you get really genuine, and sometimes life shit happens and you forget to message back. But
yeah,
it's a different experience, and I think there are probably pros and cons.
Yeah. I mean, one of my opening lines on Tinder, who I stole off a friend for ages, was if you had to get rid of one thing, would it be nonfiction books or Italian food? And there was always there was a really good conversation starter.
Yeah.
And usually if they didn't reply, I was like, wow, if you're not going to reply to that question, you're not going to reply to anything.
Nonfiction books.
You'd get rid of nonfiction books?
I would get rid of Italian food. Because I love nonfiction, but I can go speak to people. If it was get rid of fiction books or get rid of Italian food, then I'd have an issue.
See, I think I'd get rid of Italian food because I would be able to make something close from the nonfiction books. You know, like I'd be able to read some kind of weird cookbook that'd be like, this is not Italian food, but it is Italian. Like, you know, like, I don't know.
But how about if you were just reading about it, you couldn't eat it? You couldn't eat pizza pasta or like, I mean, that's very quintessentially Italian and there's so much.
Yeah. But see, like already we've just had like a little conversation about like,
so true,
you know, and it just things like people always go on about icebreakers, but that like things like that actually help. Like if I match with someone on Tinder and they just like, oh, hey, how's your day? Like I'll reply, but it's kind of like, I've had this conversation before. Like,
yeah,
I have to go through the motions and so it's a very interesting, like, I actually a few years ago at a work staff party, one of our staff members, his partner he was seeing at the time, she absolutely ripped me out for being on Tinder. Like she was just like, what kind of self-respecting person would be on Tinder, blah 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 blah, and just actually went full nuts. And it was the first time I met her as well, and like she'd been getting along great, and then it was just kind of, I don't know, this game changer, eh? Like, and everyone was kind of like, oh whoa, what the, like, this is weird. And I sort of like laughed it off and I was just like, wow, you know, it's a way to talk to people I wouldn't normally meet probably in real life. It's a way that I can screen like the people that I could end up dating. Like I literally see, you know, down, and she's like, oh, it's so superficial. You know, you're just literally swiping on, you know, people. Like if you like what they look like. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, but it's not like, that's one thing I actually wanted to ask you about from do you think that the dating apps like cause us to be a bit more superficial? Because you're like basing it on like a first impression of what someone looks like, because most of them are just pictures. There's no like description straight away. You actually have to click on like a photo to get a bio or anything. So I don't know, like, and this is not like a woe is me kind of comment or anything, but like I know when a guy's handsome, right? Like I can point out if a guy is handsome. It's like easy to me. And I know probably for some people, I'm probably not a handsome guy, and that's fine. I am totally comfortable with that. But like, where does the line from superficiality, like I can talk to you, I can talk to anyone about like anything of this stuff. And I feel like, not to be egotistical, but I feel like I could charm them over. I could feel like I could, you know.
You're super charming, yeah. I mean,
I didn't want to say it, but.
I'll give you that. I'll freaking give you.
All right.
I actually think what's so amazing about you, just to give you a good plug, is just your ability to have conversations about multiple things and listen. I think there's, slightly off topic, like there is a lack of listening or asking questions that people have now. I think people love talking about themselves. We all do. But there is an art in asking questions and talking about various topics. And I think being somebody who did online dating or different types of dating, that would always stand up more to me is somebody being interested in who I was. So when you talked about the pasta and books thing, that is a great conversation starter to go, who are you? Like, what do you prioritize? And because it doesn't really matter about the pasta or the books, what's going to come out of that is, do you love food? Like, is that what gets you excited about?
Yeah.
Like life, what type of books do you read? Like, there's so much more there. And I had like a lot of judgment, I think, around online dating when I first started. It was around that. It's very superficial. I didn't really like how superficial I became on it. There's particularly when you first get on them, like whether you were first on it or after a big break, there'd be so much more to go through.
It
would usually be after a good half a bottle of wine. I'm probably just like, fuck life. I want to have sex, or I want to go explore a new relationship. And you don't almost have time to, like, there'd be some people who really caught your eye. It could be physically, or it could be what they were doing. Travel seems just a fucking turn on for me. I'm like, yes, you love to travel. You particularly because my first relationship, one of the reasons it was always a non-long-term thing for me was because he didn't want to travel.
Right.
And so I know that for me, travel is like I have to have. So it's always a turn on.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But yeah, you basically are doing it on what catches your eye. Now, yeah. I don't know if that's, I mean, superficial to an extent, but isn't all of it relatively superficial? Like there are some yeah. people that you might work with or you know, and then end up seeing in a different light. But most of the time we're dating, we're doing it because somebody catches our eye. Whether or not, like, it doesn't mean they have to be societally attractive. It means you find something about them attractive, right? I've had people that have swiped on Tinder or Bumble, and people have been like, what the fuck? And I'm like, that's attractive to me. You know, look at that smile, or look at him with his niece, or what I'm hoping is his niece and not his actual daughter. Like, you know, so I would bounce back and go, I think we're superficial in multiple spaces. But I also think we don't give ourselves enough credit for highlighting like little things that are attractive to us. And I don't think there's anything wrong with knowing what you're attracted to. Physical features and physical areas and spaces are something we
it's the whole package, right? Like,
exactly.
You know, you have to be happy with the whole thing. But I think as well, and it's probably where this, where I got chastised at this work Christmas party about is, I think at the, like for the first few years, like Tinder was mainly seen as like a hookup app. It was like mainly that's what it was. But then, like I've got a couple of friends who've like been in long term relationships because of Tinder now. Like people were actually, I'm hoping that people are like, oh, you can actually meet someone on Tinder and then end up, you know, being with them for a long term thing. Like it is a thing. It can happen.
Do you think that's why other dating apps came out though? Because I know Tinder was getting a really bad rep, like in the woman's space. It was always about fuck boys. Like get on there if you want to have a fuck, but don't expect to find any relationship. Bumble came on because you had to send the first message. I actually never had Hinge, so I don't know what that's like.
But well, Hinge, I've got Hinge at the moment and it's like their whole marketing thing is it's the app designed to be deleted.
Yeah.
Which actually, this girl I'm going on a Tinder date with tomorrow night is through Hinge. So it's, I just said Tinder date on Hinge. Yeah.
That shows that I've got, like, Tinder's done well.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting thing. And one reason I actually deleted Tinder for quite a long time is there was a lot of bots. They seem to have sorted it out now, but there's still the odd one. So like you'd swipe right and it looks legit, it bio's legit, and then you start talking and it's like just automated responses and wanting you to sign up for a website. It's kind of like so that kind of sucked as well.
I wonder if guys get that more than women. I've never had that ever.
Well guys
are the ones who spend money on Tinder. Like women very rarely spend money on Tinder, right? That's interesting.
The only time I ever spent money on Tinder was when I traveled around Europe.
Yeah.
That was the only time, and it was just to meet people.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. I've never spent money on it otherwise.
Yeah. I don't think every guy does, but it probably more likely in the man demographic to spend money.
Oh, I 100% agree with that. But yeah, it's a wild ride, man. There's even people, like there's people I've matched with on Tinder that I've known from like when I was a kid that I didn't like I've just never seen and like reconnected with. So it's like it's had some good positive experiences for sure.
Have you found it overall?
I don't know. And this is I like it overall. I think it's a great tool. I don't want to be like become a marketing guy for them or anything, but you know, I think it's a great way to, as I said earlier, meet people that I normally wouldn't meet, or like, you know, as I've got a bit older as well, I don't tend to go out drinking and go out to bars, and I don't have the chance of like naturally meeting someone. And if I usually meet someone, it's a friend of a friend. So it's kind of a good way to do that. And honestly, it's, there are some downsides, and part of this, and I'll explore this a little bit, is like when you talk to someone on an app, you have a really good conversation, and then as you said, like maybe they just forget to reply, or like or you're feeling like, oh, this is a really good conversation, this is going somewhere, and then radio silence, or like they start seeing, they say, hey, it's been really nice talking to you, but I've actually just started seeing someone or something like that. I think that's frustrating. And it's almost, where's the next one going to come from?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of a, that's probably the only downside. And that's definitely only really as I've got older. Just because, you know, maybe a little bit of societal pressure because I'm getting older, like to settle down or whatever. But, you know, it's definitely kind of like, is the next one going to be the one or whatever like that. So that's been fun to wrap my head around.
Actually, that's a really good point. I mean, you've been on dating apps like 7 years. Has there been quite a difference between how you approached it or how other people that you matched with approached it at like, you know, mid-20s versus in your 30s?
Yeah, kind of. I found actually when I was living in Auckland, I found people that I met off Tinder were a lot more honest in my mid-20s. I met up with a French woman off Tinder. We had a couple of drinks and like after a couple of drinks, she was a bit of a lightweight. But she straight up told me, she's like, you're a bit fatter than your photos. She said that to me. And I was just like, holy shit, okay. Like, I know I've put on weight, but fuck, like this is brutal. Yeah, so that was kind of, but like we actually ended up having a really good night. And then we got onto some real deep discussions and stuff. And I never saw her again after that, but it was like kind of, I don't know, definitely in mid-20s, people were like less afraid of saying what they wanted. Or like there was a couple of women I met up with who were just like, hey, like who were very straight up. They're like, hey, I actually just came out of a long-term relationship. I just wanted to meet some people. If something happens, cool. If it doesn't, that's cool as well. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like,
yeah.
But like now it's kind of almost like a, depending on, you know, I'm 33 and there's like, if I'm sort of matching with people the same age, there's a lot of, it's like a chess game. It's like a bit of strategy, like trying to figure out like what their life plans are. Like what are they, you know, like are they wanting to, do they want kids? Do they want to settle down and get a house? Do they, you know, what's their life plan? And it's, I don't know, that like for me that's actually kind of cool. Like I like kind of playing that game a little bit and just, you know, I'll be straight up honest if they ask and vice versa. But like I think that's kind of more appealing now as well. Like in my mid-20s I was like, hey, if you just want to have sex, that's cool, I'm down for that. If you don't, that's also cool. But now it's kind of like a bit more, yeah, a bit more strategic. And, you know, if we see each other, like, I don't know, you almost put a little bit more pressure on yourself though. Like the first time you meet someone off Tinder now, and well, at this age I find, is like, because you're like, what if this is the one?
Yeah.
You know, what, I'm 33 now. What if like this goes really well? Like, and I see, you know, it's, whereas in my mid-20s, it was just kind of more like, let's see what happens, you know. So, yeah, that's probably the major differences. Yeah, Tinder, Bumble, Hinge.
Online dating. I mean, to be honest, yeah. I don't find online dating any worse than like in fucking somebody talking to you in a bar type of dating. I mean, it's all slightly awkward trying to work out if another person fits you.
Yeah.
Really.
About 3 or 4 years ago, I went on a blind date, not through Tinder or anything, just through a friend. It was actually my ex-girlfriend who set it up, which is hilarious. But it, like, that was kind of funny because like we both went in not knowing anything about each other, and because it was like we're in the Tinder age, it was like kind of new and refreshing again to meet someone like and just figure it all out. Yeah, it was pretty funny actually.
But I love that.
Haven't done that for a while.
Yeah, blind dates are so interesting. But talking about like first dates, what is going on in your mind on a first date?
First date, like most of the time it's going for a drink. I think it's like, it's, you know, I can only imagine like what goes through a woman's head. Like they're going to meet a strange guy, they're met off the internet. Like if it was me, I'd be like, I'd have all these contingencies in place, you know, like I'd definitely have a friend going to ring me at like, you know, just to make sure that, you know, I'm not some murderer or a creepy, you know, or just some way to bail out of it. But honestly, the first thing is just honestly making them comfortable. And usually for me, my go-to is trying to make them laugh. So if we just sort of get chatting and I can make them laugh, you know, then hopefully that relaxes the atmosphere a little bit. But that's like, I almost, don't want to sound too alpha, but I make sure that responsibility is mine. Like, it's my responsibility to make her feel comfortable. And like, yeah, you know, if she's not feeling it, then I trust myself to pick up on that and either broach it or, you know, just call it and be like, hey, you know, this is it. Like, nice to meet you, but this is not it or whatever.
It hasn't happened
too much, but yeah, like, I mean, you've known me 10 years. It's kind of making people laugh is my thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's
a great thing to do. I think it's a really like easy way to create a safe, neutral space when somebody makes you laugh.
Yeah. I went on a Tinder date. This one actually was Tinder a few weeks ago. And it was a Saturday night actually. And we went to this bar. It was like a board game bar. It was really cool anyway. But I always kind of, I don't want to give away all my tips, but like one of my things is like when you're going to meet someone, it's like you kind of know what they look like, but you're like, oh, are you going to wear some kind of identifying piece of clothing or something like that? And like, usually they find it funny if you've got to that point. Cause it's like one chick I met up, she just wore like a red scarf around her wrist. and that was like how I knew it was her. And, this chick that, I met a few weeks ago, she asked me, she's like, oh, how am I going to know it's you? And I was like, oh, I'll wear a party shirt. Like, so like there was like all these people playing board games in the bar, and then I'm there wearing like a highlighter blue with pink flamingo t-shirt, and she just I didn't see her come in, she came in from behind and she was just like, party shirt. And I was like, yeah, like, and that was and there was the laugh straight away. So it was kind of,
yeah,
you know, kind of a cool thing. But yeah,
I think that's awesome. I think most people should try aim for that, because it's just like the typical icebreaker. But in terms of when you're having the first date, do you usually rely on the first date to tell you whether it's a thing or not? Or do you like to try for like a second date or third date or whatever?
I usually, like, if it's like an hour and a half, maybe over a couple of drinks, I usually trust my judgment to know if I want to go on a second date or that kind of thing. But there's definitely like I've talked to some friends about this actually. Is like, especially now in my 30s, kind of like I think the conversation becomes a lot more serious a lot quicker, because you don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste her time. You don't want to waste your own time. A very close friend of mine who you know as well, he doesn't want kids, right? And he was dating a girl for like 3 or 4 months before he found out that she wants kids. And like, to me, that seems ridiculous. You need to find that shit out on like the second date or like, you know, even the first date. You know,
yeah,
like, otherwise, what's the point?
You don't want to get emotionally involved with somebody if your like life plans are just so different.
Yeah. And I mean, she in that situation, she was just like, oh, the good thing about you is that because you don't want kids, when I want them, we can just break up. I was just like, so you
is
know,
is it like it's not going to hurt at all? Transaction over.
And I was just like, holy! Like, I don't know if that's how it was actually delivered, but that's how it was told to me. So I was kind of like, but yeah, I think, yeah, I trust my judgment pretty well. But like, there's all sorts of I don't want to say a checklist, but like, there's all sorts of things in my head that I'm like, oh yeah, they meet that criteria, or you know, like it's kind of like, oh yeah, there's a bone of contention that we probably need to discuss, or like there's definitely things like that. I'm also pretty, I've noticed as well that just with women in their 30s, they tend to want to know more about your previous relationships, which has been a bit of an interesting mind shift. Because some of them I've never really talked about. And my most recent partner, she'd come out of a marriage before we started seeing each other. And actually one thing you touched on before, she was like, one thing she said about me that she really liked about me and I'd never heard before was that I was a really good listener, and like none of my previous partners had ever said that to me. So that was kind of like a new thing for me to deal with. But in a way it was like a good thing, because I was like, oh shit, I'm actually, okay, I'm, that is a good thing. I should keep doing that. You know, but when you don't get that constant reassurance, but she, when we were together, she wanted to know. It wasn't just like out of the blue, but we sort of built up to what caused my previous relationships to, you know, she wanted to know those kind of things, which made it, and she was 6 years older than me. So it was kind of a very eye-opening experience talking about them, because most of them I had never talked about with friends, let alone a current partner. So, that was fun.
Do you think it was good? Do you think it like?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I reflect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I learned more about myself, as cliche that it is, like with her, than I probably have with any other partner I've ever had. So, but in a way that almost became a little bit of a burden on her, because she's like, I'm not just here for you to learn about yourself. Like, you know, so it was, yeah, but it was definitely the most adult and mature breakup I've ever had. And we're still really good friends. So that's good. That's positive.
What made it adult and mature?
Just communication, just talking about it. And this is kind of, you ever been in a relationship where you know it's not working, like you know it's not working, but you like it's more convenient to stay together, or you stay together because the sex is still amazing but nothing else works, like, you know, it with this one there was all of that going on, but it was like we just talked about it, we just were very open about and then I opened up because she pushed me to, which was really good though. And I think that's probably what made it a little bit easier to take, because it wasn't, yeah, we split up, but we still talked, like, you know, a couple times a week and caught up for a beer or whatever, you know. It wasn't like, oh, I hate you and I never want to see you again. It was kind of, you know, it was very, very, I felt it very adult about it.
Yeah. I think communication is such an interesting thing, because a lot of us refer to it as an adult style, which is so interesting, because like kids, I think, are awesome at communication. They're just straight up, this is what I want and need, and they seek that. But you're right, there's a stage we go through, we're really kind of talking around each other, and then you almost come back to going, no, you just need to open communication, and because you make stories up otherwise.
Yeah. I found it for years like hard to say exactly what I wanted to say, because I was either scared of how it would be received or scared of the consequences of me saying it would be, you know, like it was. So with her, it was like, I don't know. She almost taught me not to be afraid of that.
She gave you like a safe space where you can just
be.
Totally. That's awesome. That is, I really wish everybody could have that type of relationship at some stage in their life, just to show them it's okay to turn up. And
I think I was kind of lucky though as well, because she'd come out of a marriage where she was unhappy for quite a few years. She was very direct and she knew what she wanted. So I was kind of lucky in that sense that she'd had that life experience that I hadn't had as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you highlighted that, you know, women in their 30s seem to be doing that more, as asking about your past. And I'm heading into my 30s soon. I find myself doing that as well, because you learn a lot about a person as to what they've gone through, and whether or not, like, I learn a lot from whether a guy takes some responsibility for a relationship failing or just blames the other person. I mean, if you've been in five relationships and they've all failed and there's similar patterns and you're blaming the other person and you can't recognize your own space in that game, then actually it tells me a lot about your lack of self-reflection. And when people hold a lot of animosity towards their past partners, like, I completely, like, we've all got hurt and trauma from it. I'm not against people holding this stuff, but it's about, are you willing to work through it, or are you going to just like sit and dwell in that and almost like seek the validation from the issues you had in your past relationship and your new relationship? So yeah, I can see, like, people get into the space in their life where they just want to sift through that bullshit, and they're like, if you have not worked on yourself, if you have not gone through your shit, go do that, then come back. Because
it is a little bit of a balancing act though, because I think like now I'm not the person I was, I'm the person I am now. So it's kind of like, it's like, I don't want to reflect too much. Like, and for a lot of my previous relationships, I acknowledged that I was the cause of the destruction. Like,
yeah,
it was me. Like, I admit that. And, but that is in the past. So I can't change it now. I can't, like, I don't even, like, this is probably a very vague statement, but like, I don't really regret anything because I can't change it. And, and I'm the person I am now. And those experiences have made me what I am now. So I'm the person I am now, and I'm the person I'll be tomorrow. So, like,
yeah
it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah, you're right. I think you can't, like, hold people accountable for who they used to be. I think it's more about how they approach those topics, which tells you a lot. So that's so interesting to know that difference.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed part one of episode 6 with Nick. And don't forget to tune in to part 2, which will be released this weekend. And let me know your thoughts. I'm really keen to hear them. All right, everyone. Have a great day. Bye.